This is that other sports shit. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back from our short hiatus when there's not a whole lot going on after the football season. Basketball season's midway right now, right? So not a lot to talk about. Trade deadline kind of came and went. Nothing huge happened. LeBron didn't go back to South Beach. He didn't go nowhere else. So there's
a huge game last night then.
I know that there was talks on him going to Golden State. I guess Golden State reached out and said, hey, what can we give you for LeBron? I think that would have been an interesting thing. But you know what? Didn't happen. So it's not interesting anymore. What is interesting is this. Pro wrestling is starting to take over our podcast, and I appreciate the fact that we've done it. And I think that you, the fans, the folks who are out there who are watching and listening, I think you all appreciate it, because just another reminder to my boy Jason, who doesn't keep up on statistics, because I think I'm the only one that can. We have nearly doubled our Spotify takes from the last show, and we didn't even have a show last week. So...
And that is from the previous week where the numbers went up. So yes. What you're telling me right now is the numbers continue to rise.
If I were to take the Spotify numbers only, I don't know how to look at Apple, so I can't. I'm sure that there's a way to do it, but I don't know how, and I'm not interested in looking. Spotify makes it very easy. If I go back to the very first show of the year and then move forward, we have probably like quadrupled our numbers since the first show.
Shout out to you, the listener. I'm jumping right in. I'm stepping right on Jesse. Y'all know how I do it. It drives me bananas when we take time off and Jesse starts the show with kind of half-ass apologizing for us taking time off. We can do shows where we don't have a lot of content, and we don't want to do that. We'd rather take two, and you're going to get some three-weekers here, ladies and gentlemen.
Especially in the summertime.
Where it's coming, where it's just, I'm traveling, Jesse's doing stuff, I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere, and it's just, we ain't got the time to squeeze it in. We'd love to. Here's the obligatory part where Jesse said if we got money, if someone was paying us a few shekels, we'd probably make it a point, appointment recording, if you will. But that's not how it rolls. That's not how we roll. So
you know, you'd get a fill in. Mad Dog would fill in for Jason while he was out. You know,
Max
would fill in for me. Max Kellerman would come in for me. Like if we were getting paid,
Marcellus
Wiley would work.
Marcellus Wiley
would come in. Give a
Jesse and I about 2 years, maybe 3 years ago, stopped pulling the plug on it. Who's gonna fill in if we can't do the week? We just don't do the week anymore.
Exactly.
We just pull it. So shout out to our old people who used to fill in for us. We love y'all, but it's just, this is how we're rolling this year. This is more than likely how it's going to be. We might get a fill in, you know, football season when we got the over unders and the pickums and Jesse's just feeling feverish to talk football. But outside of that, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to get a big wallop, a big dose of pro wrestling this week. You're going to get some combat sports, of course. The show has always been rooted in combat sports. 10 years ago when Jesse and I sat down, we loved talking combat sports. He was from a combat sports base. I was from a combat board sports base podcast, criteria, if you will.
Yes.
And we decided, hey, this is cool, but why don't we do a show with a little bit of this and a little bit of that? Let's talk football. Let's talk basketball. Let's talk baseball. Let's talk whatever piques our interest, whatever gets our juices flowing, if you will, whatever gets us hashtag horned. And so right now, it's pro wrestling. Our love of pro wrestling has never went away. Jess and I are grown-ass men who are still little kids. At some point, as you get older, you go through cycles where you are a little kid. You don't want people to refer to you as little anymore. Stop calling me little. And then you're a man. And then at some point, as you age as a man and you get older, you go, this being a man shit sucks. I miss being a kid and having no responsibilities and just being able to kick back and play video games all day and eat unhealthy all day and just do cool shit. So we
drink
just
Mountain Dew straight out of the 2 liter jug.
We just go to fucking 7-Eleven and get a super big gulp and do of those Canadian destroyers where you're putting a Pepsi, a Mountain Dew, a Dr. Pepper, fucking Sprite, whatever else you want to throw up in there. Just throw it all in there and we're gonna drink it and act like this is totally normal. That's what we roll. So yeah, we're holding on to our childhoods here as long as we can as we sadly get closer to our 50s than we are our 40s. Jess, the itinerary, we will share it with our listeners. We've got some pro wrestling. I just attended WWE Fresno a few days ago, about less than 2 weeks ago now, about 10 days. We've got Elimination Chamber. This week we have AEW's pay-per-view. And I really want to spend a few moments getting my sting on because Jess and I, again, we're old. And we grew up in that 87 era where Sting was the blonde surfer.
The surfer Sting.
Different face paints, the Stinger splash. Really, you could almost say Sting was a high flyer back then, but had the physique, like, was just fucking ripped. So, listen, I'm sure our pro wrestling listeners have been hearing people blow Sting for weeks now. So, you trust me, we're ready. We're ready to get on our knees. We got time. We've made some time here. we'll talk the last 2 weeks UFC. We will not be talking this week's UFC. If you're looking for some gambling advice from us this week, spoiler alert, we're not going to give it to you. We will talk Volk. We'll get into all of that. I am going to save, because we are planning on doing a show next week. And next weekend, you've got the UFC pay-per-view, which is a good one. And you've got some Saudi madness. You've got Ngannou taking on AJ. And I know Jess has takes on that. But Jess, please, can them. I'm gonna ask you, please, can them and save them for next week, because we have so much to talk about right
All
now.
All right, we're gonna talk about that next week. Well, next
so,
week.
Jess, I'm going to jump right into WWE Fresno because I'm Let's already it, going
tell,
right here.
Tell,
I'm already
tell
going right here. I got the ball, so let me just continue to run with it if you don't mind. Went to the local show. It was a house show. It was a Sunday night show. I feel like I've said this to you, Jess, this is four shows that I've been to now. The days of being able to walk up to a WWE event day of or night before and get a $15, $20 ticket and sit right off the floor are gone. Those days are long gone now. There were probably well over 9,000 people at this event.
Jeez.
It was the biggest house show of any pro wrestling event of the year. I know we're early in the year, but Fresno came out. It's the first wrestling event that I can remember, any wrestling event, whether it's AEW or WWE, since they were doing the live tapings, and this was probably 10 years ago. I don't think they brought a SmackDown back in the last 10 years, where the upper venue, the upper deck, if you will, was not curtained off. You know, you used to get a lot of curtained off back in the day, you know, the last 10, 12 years. That's gone. They basically turn those into the $15 walk-up seats. So if you're showing up the night before or the day of with your kid because he's crying because he wants to see Cody Rhodes, he's watching him from the nosebleeds. He's watching him from the upper deck. So the matches themselves, Jess, this was one of the least exciting shows I've been to match quality-wise. There wasn't a match that I left the arena going, that match was special. You know, when I watched, what's her name? Becky Lynch wrestle Tiffany Stratton the last time they were in town, I went, that match was special. When I watched Bianca Belair wrestle, I believe it was Charlotte Flair 2 years ago, I went, those girls are great. That match was special. When I watched Roman Reigns 4 years ago wrestle, God, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, the bald guy that's in NXT now, Happy Corbin, I went, that fucking guy, Roman's special. There was no true match to me that absolutely popped. But I will say this. I want to give like two or three wrestlers or flowers here, Jess.
Let's do it.
Kaiser, this Kaiser, I think it's Ludwig Kaiser or Kaiser Ludwig.
Yeah.
Incredibly impressive. The facials were there, and his heelish ways of reacting towards the crowd and keeping the crowd hating them, high level, high level. I think that kid's gonna be I think he's got a lot of upside potential. He's not a big boy. You know, the WWE has a lot of big boys. He's not a 265er by any means, but was just very impressive throughout this match. They did a thing where he came out with Walter, and then at some point there was a DQ, like a schmage finish, with Walter and the other guy that I want to speak about, Gable. I believe it's Chad Gable, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then it ended up being a 3-on-3 match because the New Day came out, and it was New Day and Chad Gable. Okay, Chad Gable. A lot of people are high on Chad Gable, and I understand why. He has some of the Kurt Angle characteristics. But if you remember 20 years ago, Jess, the knock on Kurt Angle then was he's kind of small. He's not as big as The Rock, as Triple H, as Austin. Just size-wise, he was, you know, maybe 20, 25 pounds lighter than them dudes. But lighter in, like, the areas you don't want to be. I look at Chad Gable, and he just looks like a middleweight to me. He just doesn't look like a big, strong dude. He's ripped like a motherfucker.
Well, I think he's short, too.
Yes.
That's another knock on him.
It's a bit of a double, you know, a double whammy when you're trying to make it to the next level. And I believe that's what they're trying to do with him. I think they're trying to propel him to the next level. But he's just not that big of a dude, Jess. And then when you see him in there with the Walters, with the Gunther, he just looks like a real small dude. And, you know, I know one of the knocks on AEW and their talent is all their dudes are small. When you have him in there with guys that are 6'3", 6'4", 6'6", it's not going to work. He's going to always be an underdog. You can't tell me that dude's going to be a world heavyweight champion. You can't.
No. And Gable is talented. He's uber talented. He's got the wrestling background. You know, I think he started off with Shelton Benjamin. They were like,
I think you're right.
They were like the Americans or whatever they wanted to call them.
I think he was an NXT guy too. I could be wrong.
He was with Otis for a minute, which I thought was cool.
Yep.
But they were doing
the comedy thing. They were doing like the comedy thing. So they had the gal with them, and I see this gal. What is it? Maxine Dupree, I think is her name.
Yes.
She's getting crushed online right now, right? Because she had a terrible match. I'll tell you what, Jess. Watch the match with her, and she wrestled Nia Jax. And Nia Jax has been known to not be a great worker. There was nothing in this match that made me think she sucks. And the thing is, the wonderful world of social media has already kind of pre-trained my mind to think this girl sucks. So when I'm watching her wrestle, I'm like, I don't think she sucks. I don't think she's a standout. I don't think she's a, you know, to use Becky Lynch's name again, I don't think she's a Becky Lynch. I don't see her like doing incredible chain wrestling, but she held her own. You know, this was the kind of the flavor of the whole night. There wasn't a lot of like chain wrestling or like true what you're used to seeing at a pro wrestling show, especially a WWE show.
Because there's no Owen Hart stuff going on.
There's no fucking headlocks and the backspins, and when you got to Chad Gable versus Walter, there was a little bit of that, but it wasn't at the level where I've seen them do it before. And so, which is again why I came away from the show like, this was just, you know, I don't want to say it sucked. It just wasn't that great. It's the pro wrestling itself wasn't great. The product, the presentation, the crowd participation, all that's top notch. But the actual in-ring wrestling, like, it was absolutely nothing to fucking brag about. So, Maxine Dupree, average. Didn't think she sucked. So for everyone saying that she sucked, I mean, I get it. But I just watched her wrestle live. I've watched bad wrestling. I've watched bad female wrestling matches before. Trust me, live. That was not one. And that was also with Nia Jax, who, again, you know, there's been a little, you know, people have said things about her talent, skill set, you know, her ability to not be safe, if you will. Worked pretty safe to me. Seemed pretty safe to me. So, main event was Cody. Cody versus Nakamura. Cody tore the fucking roof off. No holds barred match was the safest no holds barred match I'd ever seen. just kendo stick here on the back, kendo stick there on the back. I think there might have been one, you know, chair shot on the back. And then the finish was they put a table up and Nakamura went through a table. And that was, and then a Cody, what do they call it? Fuck Crossroads. And that was it. That was it. Fuck goodbye and good night. Jess, I remember going to house shows in, for the WWE and you get 10 matches. And at some point they cut it to 8. And I was like, all right, you know, 8's not bad. You get 4, you get your break, you get 4, you're out. It's great on the time, you know, you get out of getting out of there 2.5 hours. This and the last show, 7 matches. They do 4 matches, they do a break, they do 3 matches after. It is quick. They don't fuck around. So overall, fun experience, Jess. For our older listeners, our age listeners, if you can afford it, if you want to, if you're thinking about taking the kids, I'd strongly advise it. Take a credit card because everything there is expensive. The shirts for kids are like $35. The hats are $35. You're looking to get them a Pharaoh dog, Cody dog. Those are $35. Like, you ain't getting much under $20 in that bitch. But my kids loved it. My two teens loved it. My homie that I always went with, he had a great time. So overall, great experience. And I would recommend anybody that's thinking about going or thinking about taking their kids, they should have at it, if you will.
Well, I mean, I guess the important part is just being at the live show. I think people miss a lot of, like, what happens in between. You know, when it's on TV, everything's set up just perfect. Cameras are angled perfect. When you're at a live show, you kind of get to see, like, some of the goings-on in the background and stuff.
A lot more.
And that adds to the overall experience, right? It's just like if you go to a live, you know, sporting event like basketball, football, baseball, whatever, you get to see like what happens during the timeouts. You know what I mean? Like you get to watch, you know, the players just kind of bouncing around during warmups and stuff. It's more of the experience, which is why I highly encourage people to go to as many live shows as possible.
Period. Maybe don't take the kids to the combat sports. But combat sports.
Yeah, maybe not combat sports. Take the kids to a football game.
Take the kids out to a wrestling show. Have some fun. What are we doing with that?
Pro wrestling shows, I think, are perfect for kids because they're, like, designed for children. I mean, you get to take the kids. There's not a lot of, like, the, you know, extra added, you know, words being used. There's not a whole lot of sex or nudity type stuff. We're not
it's
the attitude
pro
era,
wrestling.
You know what I mean?
It's old school. Someone's going to come out and clearly be a bad guy. The kids are going to figure out real quick who to boo, and they're going to figure out who to cheer. And so, 100%. Fun time for all. Jess, Elimination Chamber, let's hit it here. There's really 3 matches I want to focus on. First match was the female Elimination Chamber. Very good match. You know, want to make sure to give the ladies their flowers, if they will. Everybody in this match was really good. Thought it was good to see Tamina back. Pecky's always really good. Everyone, it felt to me like a get your shit in type of match. Every girl was able to get in and get their shit in. There was not big lulls or lags. I've heard of the bad female Elimination Chamber matches. I personally have never seen them, but this one I thought was good. Any thoughts on this match, Jess?
Yeah, so they brought in Tiffany Stratton and Raquel Rodriguez, right? And I think that's smart to bring in 2 up-and-comers to put in a match like this just to test their merit, so to speak. And I think that Raquel Rodriguez has some insane talent. Like, she has good personality. She's got the look. You know, she's got a little bit of attitude to her. I think that she can definitely rise to the top. Tiffany Stratton, I'm sorry, but like Maxine Dupri and some of these other women, like, yes, they're good wrestlers. I don't want to take nothing away from them. But I think being a man-driven sport, they get a lot of shit because they're so fucking hot. Like, we
Yep.
forget that they're actually athletes as well, right? So when they're wrestling, it's more along the lines of like, well, I want to watch her walk down. I want to watch her bend over. She's going through the ropes. I want to see, like little twists and spins that she makes during
You
the
see the
entrance
big
in the
dive.
ring. And then when the match happens, it's kind of like, oh, okay. I think that that's a shame that there's a lot of that, sexist and misogyny in the fandom of pro wrestling. And it's everywhere, right? But like, you gotta, if you're a mark, a true mark of the sport, you truly love pro wrestling, you have to be able to give these women props. I think Stratton held her own. I think that Raquel was a little bit better. And then when you're in there with Becky Lynch and Bianca, and then Liv Morgan even has really come a huge, like huge miles and miles above where she was like 2 or even 3 years ago. And then you know what I mean? So like the good thing is that you got these true professionals in the ring with these ladies who are trying to be up and comers, and they kind of pull them with them. And that's what I like about the women is that they always like the top notch. They pull the underlings, so to speak. They pull them with them instead of push them back. A lot of like give and go, like you were talking about, in not a lot of lulls to keep the action rolling. And let's face it, man. Like Becky Lynch, she's gotten a huge run for years now. But I absolutely adore Becky Lynch. Like
Yeah.
the personality is 100% WWE. The in-ring action is 100% WWE. And on top of that, she manages to be a good person on the outside of everything. And then obviously married to Seth, and they got a kid now. And she's bounced back from all that, and she's right back to where she was, deservingly so, to win this match. Bianca had a huge run over the last couple of years, specifically while Becky was kind of, bouncing back and forth between being pregnant and stuff like that. But
Being a mom.
Bianca Belair is an amazing talent.
Yes.
She's going to be in that mix for the rest of her career. There will not be a time where Bianca Belair is a mid-card type wrestler. Never. So
So
really fun,
unique.
fun match.
So unique, Jess, if you think about 2 years ago, she has the Sasha moment where she beats Sasha and it's a big deal. It's
Big
like
deal.
this is her moment. I think they main evented WrestleMania night one. Last year she wins again at WrestleMania, and then it's like she's going on this run. She does. I mean, you want to talk about the five tools. She's got everything. She's got the look. She's got the athleticism. She can cut the fucking promo. She can work. She's just a stud, absolute star. And this year, for whatever reason, just kind of got lost in the sauce. And now you're gonna have. And I'm not saying it's weird, but you're gonna have the what the hell is her name? The chick that's wrestling at WrestleMania that won the Royal Rumble. I can't even remember her goddamn name, and I should. This is not good. Wrestling Io Sky, and it's tough because while she deserves her moment, while she truly deserves her WrestleMania moment, because she's been there, been in the trenches, going back to that Ronda Rousey, circle of NXT gals. I'm not too sure if she comes across as a much of a superstar as a Becky, as a Rhea, as a Bianca, as the gals that we just named. So I still can't remember her name, and I'm racking my brain like, why in the hell can I not remember her name, Jess? Who the hell is? You don't know it either. How bad are you?
I don't
You're
know,
terrible.
but then again, I'm also one of those borderline misogynistic fans, so.
Yeah, so I don't play. Hey, and to kind of say this, the WWE instilled the misogynist in us by just being like, how do you say, kind of like, look, these women are sexy. Look at these women. They're presenting the women as sexy. And I'm going back to like, late 80s, early 90s, and then of course the Attitude Era, where it was just like bring out the strippers that can take bumps. Like, it got messy.
Trish
So
Stratus and all
let's keep it moving here,
Yes,
Jess.
let's
I
keep it
want to
going.
talk about the men's elimination chamber because it was a ton of fun. One thing I tweeted about here, Jess, and one of the big knocks on AEW is they're not able to create matches, right? We're getting a lot of, and we're seeing it on Collision, and we're seeing it on this we're seeing it leading up to the pay-per-view. It's the Tony Khan Yahtzee role. Let me take three or four wrestlers and tag them up with these three or four wrestlers, and we're going to have a match where you're getting eight talents. You want to see these guys, but it's just like a mishmash. Like, it doesn't always work. What they did in the Elimination Chamber is they went, we're going to tell a story. We're going to tell a story with LA Knight and the interference there with AJ Styles. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a match set up. Boom, that's done. We're going to set up a feud here with Randy Orton and the guy that was bumping heads with Randy Orton, whose name escapes me right now, even though I just watched a goddamn thing. My point is, they were able to create three matches out of one elimination.
Are you talking Logan Paul?
Exactly. Thank you so much for that. So now you can do Logan Paul, Randy Orton at WrestleMania, because the ending of that match, Logan Paul uses the brass knuckles and robs Randy Orton of a chance to beat Drew. And that was after he was eliminated. So it's truly a cheat shot. Or if somehow they go, no, we don't want to do that. We want to put Randy with somebody else. You go right back to Kevin Owens, Jake Paul.
They had a little beef. They were doing, and
not only that, they were doing a great job of playing off of each other. The match they had at the last pay-per-view doesn't have to be the be-all end-all match. It doesn't have to be the finish of that story, if you will. They can continue to do other stuff with Owens and Paul. There's still a story there to be written. So three matches out of Elimination Chamber. Any thoughts on Elimination Chamber here, Jess?
One is I think that the final conclusion on LA Knight is that they don't see him as heavyweight champion material, which I think is a shame, because I think that it would be a fun run to have a guy.
He's over his
fun. You know, it would be a fun run to have him as a heavyweight champion. He's semi-heel, semi-face. Like, he can do both. He can piss everybody off. He can be loved by everyone. So, but I think that this kind of means, like, yes, we're going to set him up with a different storyline, but no, he's not heavyweight champion material. I think that's, again, that's a shame. Drew McIntyre having another comeback, I think, is cool. But the only problem I have with Drew is when you're near 7 feet tall, 260 some odd pounds, being injured is just something that you're waiting to happen. And he's come off several major injuries over the past 2 or 3 years.
Older,
it's not longer.
Cat. Older. Cat.
And so what happens, and he is an older dude. He's been around the market for a long time. And so, yes, it's cool to push him. It's cool that WWE still wants to push the giant, right? But what are we going to get with Drew? You have to kind of be careful in his matches. You have to have him take it easy. Those knees are kind of shot. He's had back problems. He's had all sorts of things. If something happens and he gets injured, I hope that they have a good, solid fill-in for if he goes down with an injury. We hope that it doesn't happen, because I would like to see this story play out. Drew versus Seth, I think, will be a fantastic match. But at the same time, just a little worried about the choice. I think, again, like, I think a Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins storyline would have been a little bit more exciting. There could have been a little bit more added edge to it. But Drew McIntyre, when healthy, is good on the mic and he's good in the ring. So just worried about the choice due to potential injuries.
Yeah, a few things. The LA Knight thing is interesting to me. Probably the second most over guy in Fresno. Third, because Cody was so fucking over, he could be 1 and 2. the Knight thing intrigues me. It reminds me of Sami Zayn last
year. Oh, yeah.
Where he was just hotter than a fucking pistol. And you go into Montreal, and that place was rabid for Sami to win that championship. And they went, nope, we're going to keep it on fucking Roman. We understand how hot he is right now. We're going to keep it on Roman. And then he cooled off like you wouldn't believe. He had the big match at WrestleMania, but he cooled off like you would. You know, the tag match
where
they beat the Usos. But he's cooled off. There's no way around it. You can't tell me any different.
Well, and it's funny because Kevin Owens has had several runs, and he has had the fortune of being able to win championships in the WWE.
And,
but I don't
Kevin
think
Owens
that
too.
Yeah,
Go ahead,
I think that Kevin Owens is it, so I'm just going to throw this out there. I know it's an old take and it's probably an overused take. If Kevin Owens was 255 pounds and looked like The Rock and had the
yeah.
attitude, and then he would be a front runner year in, year out to be winning championships. I think that because he embraces his
Represents.
pudge and he wears the shirts in the ring and he wears the long shorts and the under, pants underneath, and I think because the physique is not there, I think that he gets pushed back a little. But I mean, I love that he's embraced his role with the WWE. He doesn't really complain about it. He goes out there
No, he
and gives
can't.
100%. His promos are still fire. His
Yeah.
off his off the mic work is fire. His in-ring ability is still fire. So he's embraced it, and I think that's cool. I just, it's a shame again, just kind of like I was saying about LA Knight. It's a shame that Kevin doesn't get the respect due to most likely his physical appearance.
Do me a favor if you're around the computer, if you can, Google Kevin Owens WrestleMania, because I want to know his last four matches. I believe they were the tag match where they main evented and they won, the Stone Cold match where Stone Cold came back and he basically was the jobber. And then I believe the year before that was the COVID WrestleMania, and I think he wrestled Edge, either Edge or Orton. Those are big matches. So I think he's you know how they say overrated, underrated, or properly rated? I think he's properly rated. I think he's right where he needs to be. I wouldn't move him off of that. Let me know if you dig up that information, by the way. The other thing I wanted to touch on, and I think you've got a very good point, is the McIntyre thing. And the McIntyre thing, if you think about it, same time last year, they did that Clash of the Castle. He wrestled Roman. He was over as a motherfucker. And they were saying then, maybe now's the time to take the belt off of Roman. He's this fucking, he's hotter than a pistol and he's in his hometown. And this is his moment. This could be his true moment, right? If you never, and you got to remember too, I believe, wasn't he the COVID champion? Wasn't Drew the COVID champion? I think he was. Where I left off at was the Kevin Owens had, I believe, four great WrestleMania matches in a row. Just try to look it up and we lost all contact. So we're gonna
We
leave it
do
as
have
is.
them
Oh, let me hear
now.
it. Let me hear it.
So, just for the record, seven total matches at seven total WrestleManias, which is impressive. Four wins, three losses. And so, going over those wins and losses, his first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 32. It was a multi-person ladder match for the IC Championship. He lost. WrestleMania 33, he beat Chris Jericho. And
Good
what
deal.
was a pretty decent match. I thought that it was a good match.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
I think Jericho at the time was like kind of ready to bounce, but he always had good chemistry with Kevin, so that worked out. Kevin Owens won the United States Championship. 34, it was him and Zayn versus Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. They lost in a crazy tag team match at WrestleMania
That's a
34.
great match too.
That was a fantastic match. Even in that loss, it was a fantastic match visually for sure. WrestleMania 36, he fought Seth Rollins and he won, just a regular match, but he won that match. 37, he beat Sami Zayn in what was like this build up to their like semi feud post,
I'm
friendship.
trying to remember, maybe that was the COVID WrestleMania.
It was 2021, so it probably was.
Give me.
The following year, he lost a Legends Get It All Their Way match to Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was basically stunner versus stunner kind of thing. It was fun. Owens, I felt, carried Stone Cold. I mean, at this
Yeah.
time, you kind of got to, right? Stone Cold's like
My dog
55
was,
years
yeah,
old.
he's
And
gassed as hell.
yeah,
Gassed as
so,
all
but
hell.
I mean, I'm sure that Stone Cold juiced up nicely, allegedly, for that match. But
Reckless speculation.
He lost that match to Stone Cold. No hurt, no shame in that. He wanted to lose that match. He wanted to lose Stone Cold. WrestleMania 39, this was last year. This is a match that Jason was talking about. Wonderful, bloodline storyline that continued even afterwards, but up until the point in time, it was Sami Zayn, a part of the bloodline. Then he ends up teaming up with Kevin Owens. Him and Owens beat the Usos for the Undisputed Tag Team Championship. So he's 4-3 in his WrestleMania appearances.
Properly ranked is what I was saying here. He's not underrated. He's not overrated. He's properly ranked.
I would say so.
Drew McIntyre, in my opinion, if you look at it, we talked about him being a champion and potentially beating Roman at Clash at the Castle, just like Sammy in Montreal. We were going, this is his moment. If they're going to give him his moment, it should be right here. Almost a reward for doing all the stuff he was doing during the, you know, the COVID championship run. They didn't do it. I'm in somewhat agreeance with you. I can see the hesitation and them going, we don't want to put the belt on you, especially the Seth belt, because yeah. The Seth belt to me feels like the belt that they're going to want defended at house shows. That's the belt they're going to want, you know, defended 150 to 200 times a year, as opposed to the Roman belt that's only going to be defended whatever, 5-6 fucking times a year.
Yeah.
But I am in agreeance with you. I'm interested in seeing what they do at WrestleMania. I think him going over, I think Seth losing would be interesting. I'm also a fan of a heel champion and somebody chasing, you know, the finish the story, if you will. I think works better sometimes as opposed to I'm the John Cena champion and then there's a bad guy doing all this bad stuff trying to chase me. I'm a big fan of the chase.
Do you think that Logan Paul has a chance to get written in as beating Seth Rollins?
Not yet. No, I think they want. I think they're gonna give it another year. I think they want to give it. I think they want to give it another.
The WWE is like college football. Like you know, you can make the team, but you got to work your ass off to get to the varsity level, right? Like, and you're gonna get shit on. You're gonna be carrying everybody's jock straps and stuff, and filling people's water cups up before you get to that point. Logan Paul is in that point. And don't make no mistake, he's in the WWE, and he may be Mr. Richie Rich, fucking podcast guy, former, like, YouTube guy. Those men and women in that back locker room don't give two fucks. He's now WWE property, and he is bottom of the totem pole. And the only reason he's where he's at is because he has shown, and we've seen, that he has actual talent to do the job, but he will work his ass off to end up getting a belt somewhere.
He's been there less than 2 years. He's already their U.S. champion or intercontinental champion or whatever.
U.S. champion, right?
Oh, yep. On top of, he was just in the main, he was just basically in a main event at Elimination Chamber, which was a big deal. Give it 2 years. I don't know about next year's WrestleMania.
But depends on where Roman's at.
But maybe 1,000,000%. But you can do right now. Jake Paul, Stinky, like you said, everybody hates the bitch, you know, stuck up kid. You can do that versus Cody right now. That's good versus bad. That's good versus evil. You can do it right fucking now. Let's keep it moving here, Jeff. We're gonna spin out of the wrestling here in a minute. Not a reason to talk a ton about the Rhea Ripley match. To me, that felt more like, let's give her her flowers. She's such a superstar. She's a global icon. Let's give her her moment, you know, under the sun. She gets the main event. She gets the $1 million with the fireworks. The match was what it was. It wasn't anything that was great and greatly impressive, but it was fun. I heard a lot of people saying, well, that was a great match for Nia Jax. I mean, I guess it was okay. It was kind of long, but it was what it was.
Let's be real. Again, speaking about the misogyny of the fans, like, let's be real. That gif and those the memes and the pictures have been floating around the internet. Nia Jax putting on the reverse Boston crab and Rhea Ripley's ass just like sucking up those
tights. She's retweeting
it. I'm just saying,
when
I'm just telling you.
When like she's retweeting it, it's like, all right, you're adding fuel to your own fire. But I don't see Rhea Ripley as the type of girl that's going to be like, I'm being over-sexualized and I don't like it.
No. I think she's embraced
she's like,
that
no, that shit sells t-shirts and posters. Keep it moving. Print more t-shirts of my ass.
She's a professional.
Listen, some girls are with it and some aren't. I think, listen, it's all about knowing your value, maximizing it. Let's hop into AEW real quick here, Jess. I know you want to talk about Swerve, and I love talking about Swerve. This to me is a little bit more how I talk about the chase. The chase for Swerve has been a lot of fun to watch. And his progression from this is a guy in that came from NXT to AEW. Well, there's a handful of guys like this. Let's see how it shakes out. To now where I mean, he was over as anybody in LA when I was at Full Gear. He was over as anybody. The place was as loud for him as anybody fucking else, including MJF. To getting the title shot, I will say this, Jess. I don't know if he wins on Sunday. If I had to bet on it, I'd say no. But it wouldn't shock me if he did. Wouldn't shock me if Hangman won either. Give me some thoughts on Swerve.
I again, like you, I'm going to piggyback off what you said. The ascension of Swerve has been amazing to watch. Like, his mic skills have become very sharpened and polished. His in-ring work has never been doubted, but now we get to see it on a different level because he's so big now. Everybody gets to watch Swerve. Everybody likes to watch Swerve wrestle. The fancy jackets, the way his style outside of the ring, when he's the way he carries himself, he almost carries himself as Swerve Strickland, even when he's not Swerve, right?
Living the gimmick.
And that gimmick is like a big deal, right? Like, you got to really earn that and make it work. I think the Hangman versus Swerve stuff has been fantastic. I think that Hangman Page is like one of the most talented guys for his size and stature, like physical stature. He can really do some really good work, and he's not afraid to take bumps. Obviously, that's like an AEW standard. It's like a staple. Like, you have to take bumps in AEW. Like, they're like, nah, if you ain't taking bumps, like, you ain't getting contracts. So, you know, he takes a bump for a big guy really, really well. And him and Swerve, I'm sorry, they just feed off each other so damn well. Like, it's like they've known each other their entire life. It's like they grew up best friends, and now they're like, oh, you want to be bad guy and you me be good guy, okay, let's do this. You know, it's like playing the game, but like they've rehearsed it their entire life. And then add in Samoa Joe and some of this stuff. Like, I think Swerve on his Instagram page put up a picture, right? It was Hangman on one side with crutches. It was Swerve, obviously. And then it was Samoa Joe in, like, this rain jacket. It was fucking
hilarious. He made fun of him. He said he was going to send him back to commentary.
Fucking hilarious, man. Fucking hilarious stuff.
So he puts him in the poncho. That was fantastic.
I think that... the MGA stuff is going to be interesting, having him, you know, rehabbing and everything. And hopefully he comes back sometime, like, later this year is what like to see.
You got to bring him back at Forbidden Door when they do it in New York.
Exactly. Exactly. That would be a big deal. You got to have him come back in a New York event. That would be great. But can you imagine just the verbal, like assassination from both those guys, MJF going at Swerve, Swerve going at MJF. It would be incredible to watch and see that happen.
They scratched the surface with it right before MJF left, and MJF was doing the who's the devil, maybe you're the devil. So they scratched the surface with it, but there's a lot you could do with Swerve.
AEW has a lot of good things going for them, and WWE, they do, like, you know, they have like three or four top priority storylines. AEW seems to create a storyline for every single wrestler that enters that ring. It's insane to me how many feuds or how many, you know, like, stables there are, or how many friendships get formed, and like where they go and what they're doing. And like, you have what is the Dark Order? They're like, oh, who's gonna adopt us? Yeah, like, it's funny that. It's funny stuff, it's like serious stuff. Like, AEW's writers, whoever they are, they deserve their flowers, because those folks are on fire. Like, everything just kind of, it becomes, even though it doesn't mesh with like the next wrestler over, the storyline meshes with the two or three people that they're talking about. And there's not one thing that crosses the line. Now, as far as like the talent side of the ring, you know, you'll have your, you know, bad matches here and there. It happens. WWE's got their bad matches. I think the AEW's roster is so huge that you just kind of see on some of those dark matches and, like, you know, whatnot, that you see some of the more like, oh man, that was ugly, you know. But typically speaking, the pay-per-views have been really solid. And especially when you come to main event time, those matches have all been really good. So as far as Swerve, I would like to see Swerve be the champion by the end of this year.
I think that I'll be honest with you. You wanted to talk about Ospreay a little bit, so I want to bring Ospreay into this conversation,
please,
because I think there's three or four guys that I would target to be the AEW champion. And I think Swerve is one of them. I think Ospreay is one of them.
Definitely.
But maybe now they'll go 2025. But man, Takeshita to me is so fucking talented, Jess. And I've been saying this on this podcast for it feels like a year now. I thought that the guy that should lose, that should beat MJF was Takeshita. And once they put him with Don Callis, I was like, all right, this works perfectly because you got a guy that's going to get mega heat and with a guy that doesn't have to try and speak English and doesn't have to go out there and I don't even like to say make an ass of yourself or embarrass yourself or anything like that. But, you know, I'm sure if he wants to, if he's going to be cutting promos in English, he wants to be proper. He doesn't want to come off looking like an ass. And as opposed to you sticking with Don, and Don walks out and he's a heat magnet. The moment he walks out, the moment they put a microphone in his hand, he's getting fucking booed and people want to throw tomatoes at him. So, and that heat hasn't went anywhere. Like it's been ongoing for 6 to 9 months. Like it's just the heat is there. So those three dudes right now, I think however you figure it out should be world champion, not continental champion, not whatever the fuck Eddie Kingston
TV champion. No,
fuck that. You put the belt on those dudes. Now again, I understand with those spray. If you got him there for 2 years, you're not necessarily going to put him on the back burner, but make sure he's in that mix. He's in those title mixes, and maybe do things where he's clearly going to win a match and then, you know, Swerve screws him or MJF hits him with the diamond ring or however the fuck we're going to get there, right? However we plan on getting there. That's what I would do. I think the future is incredibly bright with AEW. Let me say one more thing and then we'll move to the Sting stuff. With Okada, I would use Okada sparingly, and I would use him almost as like a special presentation type of thing. I would only have him wrestle. I'd have him like almost like a Roman, not as bare where he's only wrestling like 6 or 8 times a year, but I would only have him wrestling on my main pay-per-views and my big dynamites, my big shows.
Yeah.
And not only that, they've had such a difficult time drawing numbers on their Clash of the Champions shows they do. That's a great place to stick Okada. That's a great place to stick an Okada Ospreay type match. That's a great place to do something like that where now you go, okay, I have to go out of my way because this is a special feature match. I believe they've got to do something like that. Protect Okada for the first 6 months to a year. Don't have him out there getting in some weird mixes where all of a sudden he's like, you know,
having to wrestle 3 or 4 times a month.
Well, not even that, but he's like, you book him into a corner where it's like, well, now he's wrestling with the Acclaimed. Like, don't do that type of shit. You know what I mean?
Again, though, going back to writers and schedulers and all those people who put that together. So all these guys have come from like a mismatch of like different, you know, organizations, you know, it's fantastic to see that like, they're like, all right, man, these old school, you know, New Japan guys, let's kind of keep them in a bunch and like have them wrestle people with similar skill sets. That way the matches don't look weird and wonky. Everything seems cohesive. You get a lot of Daniel Bryan versus those guys. Ospreay is going to get a bunch of those guys to begin with just to kind of start going on things because it's what he knows. And we've seen it done with other, you know, especially some of the Japanese wrestlers that have come over. We've seen them not necessarily get in with your Hangman Pages and your, you know, so on and so forth. They work them into matches that are going to look visually good according to their skill sets and the person across the ring's skill sets.
Give me some thoughts on Sting. Last match this week. We started the show by talking about we're old and how much we love Sting. But give me some thoughts on Sting here, Jess.
So, just to try to, you know, float poetically with Sting is just, you know, he came in, he was the bodybuilder guy, he had the big build. I believe he came in as a tag team partner to the Ultimate Warrior. That, you know, didn't really pan out. They could have, but you know, just different ways they parted ways. Sting ended up going a different direction. The first recognizable Sting for myself is obviously like that late 80s, early 90s surfer Sting with the bright colored paint and the
Oh, yeah.
big, you know, the big shoulder pad outfits and the Sting, of course, on the pants, you know. And then, of course, if you want to get into it, then it was like his feud with Ric Flair. That was like really his up and coming. Like, this is the guy. This is the moment where we see a semi passing of the torch from the old to the young. The many, many matches with Ric Flair. And I can't remember one Flair versus Sting match that sucked. They were all fan fucking tastic matches. Just brutal too, like big hard slaps, like real fucking slaps. Like these guys were bleeding on their chest and stuff, and like punching each other in the face. Like they really went hard at it. But that was just the time that, you know, that was how things were done. You wanted to test the mettle of the guy standing next to you who's supposed to take your spot. And so Flair and Sting just really battled it out. Sting's run with what was it, NWA or TNA?
Well, yeah,
TNA.
TNA.
His TNA run, this was shortly, and I didn't even touch WCW years yet. I just want to say that going to TNA, I really thought was going to be a bad thing for Sting. A lot of these young, kind of no-name dudes there, and they all wanted to make a name. And who are they going to try to make a name off of? They're going to try to make a name off of Sting. Sting flowed and just, he was wonderful. The skill set had not diminished that much by that time. He was still just running around doing his Sting thing. I will tell you, I know that it's probably the least favorite of his personas if you ask amongst Sting fans, but Joker Sting was phenomenal.
Yep.
I can't get enough of Joker Sting. I go back, you know, I YouTube Joker Sting all the fucking time at work. Like I think it's phenomenal work. Like I get it. Yeah, he's totally ripping off the shtick, but you know what? It
The
worked.
Joker Sting was better than anything he did in WWE.
It fucking worked. And then to go back to his WCW days, he was like the hero Sting. You still have him in the face paint and stuff, the bright colors. And then here comes like that turn of the tide and that, like, what would like 92, would you say? Like 91, 92, 93, something like that. Then you get the invasion, Hall and Nash.
That
And
was like
then you get the
96,
some,
97.
yeah, okay. So yeah, leading up a little bit, 96, 97, you get the Hall and Nash stuff, and then you get the Hogan turn,
Well,
and then
this is
now you have the NWO.
here's an interesting one, Jess. Right around that time, Bischoff has talked about this. He just told Sting to stay home. He told Sting, "Stay home, and I'll pay you. We don't have anything for you, but we don't want you to leave. We don't want you going to the competitors. So just stay home, and we'll pay you." And there are stretches in the mid and late '90s where
you can see.
there's no Sting. There's
Yeah.
no Sting. He's part of WCW. He's part of the roster, but he's not getting fucking paid. He's literally, and I think that's when he started to go into the Christianity as well.
Yeah. Well, we've seen something similar happen with HBK when he kind of went that route. He
Don't
went.
say it like it's a bad thing. You
No,
say it
I'm
like it's a
not
bad
saying
thing.
it's a
You're like,
bad thing or a
oh,
bad thing.
fuck
No, no, no.
yeah.
I apologize. My tone
All of our
was not
Christian
taken.
listeners. All shout out all our
All
Christian AF listeners.
my religious based, faith based folks out there, listen, it's fine. You do what you got to do. I'm just saying that, like, at that time, it changes a person. It really does.
I
And it
agree.
changes your mentality. It really does. And at the time, HBK was going through a bunch of shit and it changed him for the better. So thank God for that, right? And Sting also going through a bunch of stuff. You know, there's a lot of stories about Sting. And I know he tried to stay away from things, but he's been open about his life and things that have happened. And he wanted to go a different way. So I think that Bischoff was knew the style of wrestling and the way that he had envisioned and just didn't think that Sting fit that vision. It was smart though for him to pay him and keep him at home because enter, like you said, 96, 97. What was it? Bash at the Beach, I think. There was some huge events going on. Hogan was coming up. There was some stuff happening. And then all of a sudden, now we start seeing Sting more often. And then all of a sudden, the NWO stuff happened, one of the most popular factions of all time in any wrestling event anywhere. And then who do they turn to? They say, hey, we want Sting to be in the NWO. And then the fans everywhere, Sting's never been a heel, right? Like, I don't remember any time in history that Sting's truly been a heel. He's always kind of been a face and really an uber face, like a John
Yeah,
Cena
it's
almost,
crazy
right?
because I'm racking my fucking brain. Maybe in TNA when he
Maybe
was
a
part of
bit.
Aces and Eights,
Maybe.
maybe.
But he even turned on them too because he was like, yeah, I'm not going to do this stuff. So you have this guy who the fans are like waiting because they just saw All American Hulk Hogan turn, right? And now they're waiting. They're like, shit, is Sting going to turn? And he says, no, I'm WCW forever. I'm WCW, for life. And then you have that huge feud between the NWO members and Sting, and all the great matches between him and Hogan and him and Nash and so on and so forth, and him just popping down from the rafters. Like, let's be real, man. That's when the Sting thing happened on the, you know,
It's Sting.
the you get the real Sting, the Crow Sting, right? That was cool. Him dropping down from the rafters with the baseball bat. I can't tell you how many times I cringed when he like couldn't get the harness off, and he's like fighting with it for a minute. I'm like, oh shit, it's taking a
When
little
they
bit
did it
long.
last night, I thought, first of all, I thought, please be safe. Just please be
Yes.
safe, dude. I had a 4 minute span where Flair gets in the ring and Flair starts doing wrestling moves or like wrestling punches. And I start going, please be careful, please be careful, please be careful. And then 4 minutes later, Sting's dropping from the fucking rafters. And I'm going, please be careful, please be careful, please. These guys are too fucking old to be doing this stuff, man. But they did the smart thing where they cut away to the Young Bucks and then they come back and Sting's unhooked.
Yes.
So whoever, whether it was Darby or security or fucking whoever, special effects, they ran over, they unhooked that fucker real fuck quick. And
And the Darby stuff is even more like, so the WCW stuff is important. Each step that Sting's taken in his career, each professional wrestling organization that he's wrestled for, he's enhanced, right? And so even in TNA, there was a match with AJ Styles, not Joey, AJ Styles. AJ was up and coming. I think you want to say like 2009, 2010, something like that. AJ was relatively new, but he was an up and comer. And he had a match. I can't remember what event, but it was a phenomenal match. And Sting allowed AJ to win that match. He saw something in AJ that he liked and he enjoyed and thought that AJ's career needed this. So he laid down, like virtually, right? Like I'm going to lose to AJ. And AJ wins this big, huge match. It was a huge deal. That was literally, like, for me, that was the catapult for AJ Styles' career. He went buck wild after that and became a huge superstar to where he is now. And Sting has done that for multiple people over his career in multiple organizations. He is a true professional company man, and he needs to be appreciated. He needs to be in, like, just they need to have just a wrestling hall of fame. You know what I mean? And then they need to stick his face up there somewhere.
It's a trip. When I think of like, if there's like a late 80s NWA slash WCW Mount Rushmore, you go Sting and Flair,
Yeah.
and then probably Dusty, and then it's probably impossible, but I would say
Maybe Arn or
Steiner
something.
Brothers. Oh, I would. I can I put both Steiners
Yeah,
and
you
put
can go
them on
both
top of each
Steiners.
other because it.
Well, that's how they stood, so.
Both, yeah, great. Or the Road Warriors. Those to me were
Oh,
like
yeah.
when I watched the NWA slash WCW as a child, those were the guys. Lex. Le well, maybe put Lex on there. Maybe put Lex Luthor on there. Lex Luger, I'm sorry. But
I can
that
see that.
when I think of Sting, I think of just my childhood. I think of the late 80s and the Stinger Splash. And the Scorpion Deathlock, and I just thought we all thought Sting was fucking cool, and Sting was the mega face. He was there, the WCW's Hulk Hogan, and Sting versus Ric Flair. I remember being a kid, and my grandpa driving to my uncle's house because my uncle would order the WCW pay-per-views, WCW Halloween Havocs, the Starcades.
Oh, I love
And
Starcade.
I would watch Flair versus fucking Sting. And I think about you know, the WCW Sting, or the, you know, the late WCW Sting, I think about, as you mentioned, the meme that the gif that everybody knows of Sting taking off the mask, and it's Sting under his own mask.
I love that. Yeah.
I also think about the last match in WCW ever, the last Monday Night Nitro, is Sting versus Flair. And Flair's out there wrestling in a t-shirt because he thought he was fat, and Sting's out there wrestling in a t-shirt, and they're both blown up in like fucking 5 minutes. And this is like a 7-minute match. It's just a super, it's like you guys are taking 10, 15 years worth of wrestling nostalgia and just microwaving it to finish WCW. When you talk about TNA, and I agree with you, Joker Sting was fucking cool.
I love this. This
is someone that isn't a big Batman, whichever Batman, Joker, Heath Ledger. I'm not an enormous fan of that. But I thought that Sting was cool. But when I think of TNA Sting, unfortunately, the first thing that I think of is the match with Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy was fucking stoned out of his mind on drugs.
Couldn't even stand up.
And they had to have Sting beat him in like 2 minutes, and Jeff doesn't know what. He's so out of it. He's so fucking out of it. It's fucking tragic. I watched it. It's on YouTube. I watched it a few months ago. I watched somebody recap it and do like, I think they did like a Dark Side of the Ring on the match or something like that. And then I went back and I watched the match, and I was just like, man, Jeff is in such bad fucking shape. And it's just the whole thing is a mess. Like the whole thing. But I will always gloss over his WWE time because I only think bad things. I think about his match with Seth Rollins where he got really fucked up. Really fucked up. And I think about the bad WrestleMania match where they dragged out like a bunch of the old NWO guys to be against the DX guys. I fucking hated it. I hated it.
Well, even the way the match ended with Triple H, like
it was terrible. It was fucking terrible. And that was just a squash. That's just, I'm the booker, and I'm Triple H, and I want to be able to say that I beat Sting. That was them just saying we want to squash all things NWA and WCW, and here's the final way to fucking just squash it and flush it. So I think his AEW run has been handled with class.
100%.
It's been not every match has been perfect, but they've done a great job.
The man jumped off of like a 30-foot rafter,
like once a month though. Dude, that became like a spot where he was doing it like every few months. It's like, Sting's gonna do the fucking high spot again. He's 60, shouldn't be doing it. And
here's the quick take on how AEW's handled Sting compared to his relatively short and very, you know, nothing WWE run is the fact that Tony Khan is a true wrestling fan. I'm sure he knows and loves Sting. He's probably watched every match that Sting has had. He adores the fact that his legends that he has, he's treated them all very well. Like anybody that's come over with legend status has been treated top notch. Even Regal has talked about, well, shit, man, maybe I should try to weasel my way back to AEW.
He loves the sport,
and he's given Sting his all due respect.
I think that Tony Khan wishes that CM Punk would have handled his time in AEW the same way Sting did. That's what I think. Jess, does Sting win his final match?
Oh yeah, Sting wins his final match. There's no doubt in my mind. You can't do all the crazy stuff that you've done, have Sting and Darby come out week after week after week and talk about the final match and you know, and then have him get squashed in his last match. It would be a Sting thing to do. I'm not gonna lie. 1,000,000%.
No, that's don't gloss over that.
It's an absolute Sting thing to do. He would totally be like, oh, you want me to lose to these guys?
No, well, I go another route. I go, Sting is going to walk in that building and go, there's one way to go out, which is I do the job. Everyone does the job on their way out. It's been that way since I was a kid in the 80s. Everyone did the job on the way out. And I'm going out, I got to do the job. That's what I'm guessing. And then I'm guessing Tony Khan and fucking the Young Bucks and everybody in creative go, no, fuck that. Impossible.
100%.
We refuse to fucking let you do a job on the way out. We are fucking laying down. You tell us how you want us to lay down and we're fucking laying down. You want to do a fucking double scorpion deathlock, a fucking Nicholas on one leg and Matthew on the other leg. We'll both tap at the same time like babies. However you want us to do
million
it,
percent. We'll do it. To me, that's how it's going to go. I'm telling you, Sting is the man in that building. He is probably the one that everyone looks up to. He's the one that everybody comes to for advice on their matches. And I'm telling you right now, he would be the first to say, hey, all my predecessors have gone out this way. This is how I got to do it. Tony Khan's going to be like, no, I actually like you. You're cool as fuck. I didn't bring you here for this. You are going to win. You pick, you choose. Nick and Matt are like, you pick, you choose. You know, you want to fucking, you know, double sled, you know, scorpion death drop. And then, you know, and on both sides and we go down, do it. You want to look at us scary and then we run into each other and knock each other out. Then you pin us at the same time. We do it. I don't care. However you want to do it,
we're doing it.
And that's the great thing. That's another great thing. I'm just going to spin AEW's wheels real quick. That's another great thing about AEW is that these men and women have come from so many different places. And a lot of them not ever with WWE. They've had to learn to scrape and scrap and crawl their way to the top. So they have like a certain respect for each other that some of these WWE pretty boys and girls don't necessarily have. And that's fine. It's not a diss on WWE by any means. I'm just saying it's a different mentality. And so there is no way in hell, unless Sting absolutely says, no, I'm going out this way. Tony will give him the option and be like, are you sure? And Sting would say, yes, let's do it like this. I just want a really good match. I want it to look good. But I think that any other way, Sting wins any way he wants.
Let's move to some combat sports here, Jess.
Let's do it.
Just a round of 45 minutes, if not more, of pro wrestling. So, pro wrestling listeners, thank you. Please don't leave because now we're going to talk, the fake fighting, if you will. I want to start, Jess, with Mexican Marab versus Triple C. Few seconds, thoughts on this fight, Jess.
It was a good fight. It was nothing to write home about. Mexican Marab is he's definitely a dude to watch out for in that division. The bantamweight division is something that he can definitely get some wins in, but it's a cutthroat division as well. That and the featherweight division are very cutthroat right now. So, but the reason I say that he can make a mark is because Triple C didn't look sharp, didn't look necessarily crisp, but he looked better than he did in his last match that happened like 2 years ago or something. Marab still was able to manage to control the fight and take it where he needed it to go and get that win over a really big opponent. So he can definitely move up.
Any thoughts on Triple C not being able to hang his gloves or put his gloves in the middle of the ring and even though he already did that already once?
I mean, it's already been done, right? Like, why are you going to let him do it again?
That's it.
It's underwater now.
So first of all, let me say this. I agree with you on the fight, and I agree with you on the thoughts on Marab. He's incredible, but that it's such a shuffle in that division. I'm not sure where he goes next, but I am intrigued. And I think he's doing a great job of going, all right, I know I'm a great fighter, but let me do this to market myself. Let me put myself here to market myself. Let me put out a dumb little video to market myself because it's funny. I think that's smart. Triple C, who I am a fan of, just the fighting, is doing a bit much now. You got to do the put your gloves in the middle of the cage, walk away. You don't get to do it twice. But then to get mad because you didn't get to do it twice, only to go, oh, guys, guess what? I'm not retiring. I'm going to fucking fight again. Well, then that you just proved Dana right, not allowing you to put your gloves down a second fucking time because you turned around a week later and said, no, actually, I'm good. I'm going to fight. Bro, stop being so indecisive. It makes me hard to cheer for you when you're so fucking indecisive.
And I do like Triple C a lot. So I agree with you 100%, but I like him a lot. I hate that he's just kind of being a little bitch about this.
Here's my one take on Whitaker versus Costa, and then we'll get your thoughts. When you land the RVD spinning heel kick and almost knock a guy out but don't finish him, kind of deserve to lose. And I love you, Apollo, but come on, buddy. Give me some
I was just surprised that he went the full round. I mean,
he didn't think he'd have the gas. He didn't have the juice.
I know it's only three. It was only a 3-round fight, but like, let's be real, man. Robert Whittaker, I'm pretty sure that I picked him to lose by TKO. Even I think that you had decision, but I picked him to lose by TKO. I thought Costa is bigger, stronger. He's going to put a hurt.
And he nearly got knocked out.
And he did. He was kind of proving my point. He slowed down a little bit, and you know, but. Costa, I was just surprised that he made it 3 rounds. But you could tell there was definitely a slowing down period. Like, you know, and Robert Whittaker was able to do what he's done in the past, where he just kind of he sees his opponent in a weak spot and just start throwing mass shots. Just even shots that don't even like aren't even hitting. Like, he just wants to be able to put a large amount of shots towards your body, and it counts on the scorecards. I mean, let's be real. If you look at that fight, you're like, fuck, dude, Costa got fucked up in those last couple rounds. He really
The last round wasn't great.
You know, but like, Robert Whittaker was just throwing a lot of everything, and it just that visually, the judges are like, damn, he's in control, and that's how the scorecards read.
Yeah, Whitaker's always going to be violent, but I still agree with what we said previously, which is he's still maybe a half step behind where he was previously, and that usually doesn't end well in combat sports. Speaking of possibly a half step behind, let's give some thoughts on Volk. You and I both
are you just going to skip over Ian Garry and his
1,000,000%? Fuck that fight. 0.0 times.
I just wanted to hear you say it because I absolutely agree. Fuck that fight.
There's too many fights. We were going long. We'll not skip
even.
It.
I'm not plenty even of time to make fun. Volkanovski, Topuria.
Topuria, we both picked against. We both thought Volk would be able to pick it back up. We thought that the loss last fight was a step up in weight in competition. Nothing wrong with that. Topuria caught him in a flurry, and that was that, Jess. Give me some thoughts.
Yeah, really nothing to it more than like you even mentioned it. If people want to go back and listen to the last show, Jason mentioned it. Topuria is so fast. And you had said that your one concern was, can Volkanovski keep up with Topuria's speed? And that was the shiny moment for Topuria. He put together just a fast, furious combo that Volkanovski just had no answer for defending. And he got caught a couple different times and went down really fast and really hard and lost that fight. Topuria is quick. Quick isn't even the word. He is just... He is lightning fast. He's got really good footwork, and he's got pop in the gloves. At that weight class, if you have pop in your gloves and you're fast, you're going to end up like John Dodson knocking every motherfucker out.
Is Volk done, Jeff?
Mentally, I think I don't think that he's done. But mentally, he's going to have to take a really hard, long look in the mirror and try to figure that out. Because he's already mentioned before... having, you know, difficulty getting up for fights and building up for fights. And so I personally don't think he's done. But, I mean, we'll find out here in the next, like, 3 to 6 months.
Is Volk officially chinny?
Chinny.
It's tough.
I'm putting it on him.
I think it's tough when you come off of a knockout loss and then go, let me fight a guy with knockout power. I think that's tough, man. I think that's tough.
You know what else is tough? Getting knocked out by a bigger sized opponent, much more power in that weight class, dropping down and still getting tagged by a smaller dude.
This is where I say chinny. Because I think sometimes once your shit gets cut off once, it can become a trend. And that's where I'm in agreement with you. I think he needs to take like 6 months off. No sparring type shit. Like, you should not even be taking any abuse to your cranium at all. Like, no one should be punching at your head, even if you've got fucking stupid headgear on. Like, just don't do it. Take 4 months off of any type of sparring. If you want to stay in gym shape, if you want to stay hitting a bag, all right, I get all that. But don't, this can't be a scenario where you go, no, I was back in the gym fucking following Monday, and I'll be good in 3 months. Like, nah, dude, you got to take 6 months off, because realistically, is Volk gonna take a tuna fight, or is he going right back to Topuria? I'm assuming he's gonna want to go right back to Topuria.
You know what? I've heard people Topuria clamoring for that fight.
If Topuria wants to wait,
no, right? I don't think it does.
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting too. But it's weird because I've seen mixed messages from Topuria where he's like, I don't want to fight older dudes. I don't want to fight those guys. They've already had their shots. So I'm interested in seeing what happens with Volk next. I don't honestly, Jess, if he fights him again even in 6 months, I don't know if I'd pick him. I'm really hesitant to touch Volk until I see like some substance. Let's keep it moving here, Jess.
Yeah, next event.
Let's touch on UFC Mexico, and I think we might be out of here after that. We'll touch on the two main events. Brian T-City Ortega taking on Yair Rodriguez. And Jess, I'll be honest, first minute and a half, 2 minutes of this fight, I was a little concerned for Brian. It looked like the old monster Yair with the strikes, the kicks, the punches, the knees. And Ortega just looked like a step behind. He was getting a little bit touched up. And there was a moment in this fight, I think he got touched up and went, all right, fuck this. I'm going back to grappling. I'm not sitting here getting punched anymore. And that, in my opinion, was the true shift of the fight, because Yair had nothing for him in the grappling department. Give me some thoughts, Jess.
Yeah, well, first thought is I always considered Yair to be a decent grappler. Like, ooh, you know, I did. But that just goes to show Ortega's style, stylistically, like his, like if you were to put it, is BJJ, right? Like he's, you know, he's a grappler, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. So his style is trained a lot longer than Yair probably. The second thing is, right off the bat, like you said, I was worried as fuck. He's bouncing around while his name's being announced, and he like sprains his ankle.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that
fucking,
too.
Fuck, how that fucking too. Bad is that? Like, when you're just bouncing around because, you know, Bruce Buffer's out there announcing you, and you see him just kind of hop and like, oh, you see the face. You're like, did he just sprain his ankle? Like, if I'm Yair, I'm attacking that shit. Like, I'm kicking, stomping at it. I'm diving at it. I'm making that thing hurt because it happened right in front of you. So, you know that. So, again, leading into that first like minute or two of the match, it was kind of like just Yair was piecing him up, and it looked like Yair was going to absolutely destroy him. And I think that that's what both of us kind of picked. I believe we picked Yair. But what ended up not happening is Yair wasn't able to keep it on the feet, and Ortega most likely dealing with a little bit of ankle pain or whatever as well, and getting tagged. Like he had a big old black eye like right before the match even ended. He decided, I can't stand up with this guy. So he did the smart technical thing. He took him. He got a good takedown, solid, stretched him out, went for the submission, and was able to get the submission. For me, it was ugly for Brian, but at the same time, that's comeback win of the year for me.
It's early in the year, but you might be right.
I mean,
who else is early in the year?
He has had when Brian Ortega first came onto the scene, he was hot shit. Everybody was like, yeah, this is a champion right here.
It's like Corona
commercial. Nowhere. He even got dumped Tracy Cortez. That's stupid as fuck. Why would you do that?
If you remember, Jess, he had that championship fight. Was it against Holloway or was it against Volk? And they fucking outclassed him. They really did outclass him.
I think it was Holloway.
And that was the moment where it was like, okay, Ortega's really, really good, but is he elite?
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Jess, with the Yair grappling. I thought he had improved in his grappling, but
yeah. This
might be where you just go, there's levels to this shit. And Ortega's grappling has always just been levels apart from other cats. And this is where it was his true strong suit, and it ended up being in my opinion, the complete difference maker in this fight, because Yair had nothing for him on the mat. Nope. I mean, he got ragged all the
time. And it sucks too. Like, Brian is the bigger of the two, so he's got a little bit more weight to him. Even at fight, at fight time, a little bit more weight. Yair's a little bit more cut, a little slimmer. Yair's obviously levels above, striking wise, than Ortega. Ortega's not a slouch either on his feet. I mean, he's tagged people up before, like we've seen it. But usually he gets in these bouts where, like, people will tag him up to where, like, the fight gets stopped or he gets knocked out or whatever. This time, the difference was him in his head. Normally he can't switch from this isn't working, let's do something different. He can't. But in this fight, he did. So it shows improvement. He said, fuck, I'm getting beat up right now. If I keep doing this, I'm going to lose. He said, screw it. I'm going to go for a takedown, try to beat him on the ground. And he did. Smart in-ring adjustments. And it worked. So props to Ortega for making that, you know, that slight adjustment in his head right at that moment.
That's what great fighters do. So you do got it. Let's give him credit. Like you said, where credit's due. Brandon Moreno, one of my favorite fighters. Brandon Raw Dog Royval, one of my favorite fighters. We were hashtag horned for this, Jess.
Yes, and, we were.
It did not deliver. Let's keep it real here. This fight fell flat and was mid. Any thoughts on this fight, Jess?
I think it's just both these guys know each other so well now. It was like there was some action. Like, let's, you know, it's not.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
I agree.
It wasn't, but completely
not enough.
Void
not
of...
what we would, not what you would think when you see this fight on paper and you go, "This is going to be Rock'em Sock'em Robots."
Yes.
It was definitely not Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Moreno looked hesitant.
Incredibly hesitant.
Royval looked hesitant at times. It was a very mid main event. But like I tweeted after the fight, like, this loss, normally losing in a championship fight does not really hurt your stock, right? Maybe you're a fight or two back from getting into a championship spot. And I'm not saying maybe he will be, but I feel like this loss really hurts Moreno.
I agree. I think that it hurts Moreno with regards to, does he get another fight with Pantoja? Because I think now it's like really back of the line.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Royval, Raw Dog just got sunned by Pantoja when they fought like 3 months ago.
Yeah,
so,
it wasn't good.
So you can't do that fight.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the fuck you do. Pantoja Figgy, please. I don't know what you do. I think this fight hurt both of their stocks, if that's at
You're
all
right,
possible.
Actually. Yeah.
If at all possible. But I don't know what you do with Royval next. I know there's a dude fighting this week whose name escapes me, whose name is going to come up in the mix. Alex Perez. He wins, his name will be in the mix. Mokaev, who's undefeated, if he wins, his name will be in the mix. But I'm not sure. I'd love to see Royval fight any of those dudes. I think those are fun fights. But I'm not sure where you go after this fight with Moreno. I think you're 100% right. He's still marketable. He's still
sure.
A star.
He's
still
a fun
a
guy. He loves Legos.
He loves Zelda. Like that.
Zelda? Come on, man.
Who doesn't? I mean, fuck. He's just like us.
He would totally hang out with us, too. Like, he'd be like, oh, I know you guys are two just totally, like, nobody dudes, but I'm going to hang out with
you. Losers.
Let's have a beer.
He's like, sup,
he'd be like, I'm a loser,
losers?
Too. Like, let's go.
Guys want to put together some Legos and fucking.
We would join. We would make our. We would make a club. It'd be called the Losers Club, and then we would all hang out and build stuff.
You know what? He could be the head of the losers. We're just like his lackeys. We're the Prince Nanas to his Swerve Stricklands. Jess, that's it. Hit the fucking wrap it up. Let me see this. One more. Please, out of respect for Sting, name this show Scorpion Deathlock.
That's the name of this, that's the title.
That's all I got.
Deathlock. Folks, it's been a great show. I've actually really super enjoyed the pro wrestling chatter that Jason and I have had for the past like month or so. And I think that you also have enjoyed it, at least in comparison to the numbers. So please keep listening. If you have anything for us, this is where you can find us at. We are on Twitter/X. You can follow Jason at Valdez, spelled backwards, 559. You can follow my personal at JTT_81. And if you have questions, comments, anything, just you want to throw a picture at us, you've been at a live event, you want to just throw something like that out there, go to Team Toss 21. We're accepting all that stuff. Show us how big of a fan you really are. Folks, that's it for us. Enjoy the rest of your week.
No shout outs?
Oh man, I almost burned
real
myself.
Quick, real quick.
Shout
real
out.
Quick. Smash Squad MMA. We love
Smash
you.
Squad at Smash Squad MMA. By the way, he loves Mandy Rose. So if you want to throw him some Mandy Rose stuff, go ahead and do that. Shout out to our boy, Chef Shea
Fat
Rollins,
who's
killing
sports.
It right now in the gym. He's looking good. He says that his dick rolls, by the way. So I'm just want to throw that out there for everybody.
I'm not going to confirm or deny that.
Yeah, there's no confirming or denying. Shout out to Justin Von Doom, our boy, Chris, wherever you are. We love you too.
Variety Sports.
Follow them on Twitter/X at Variety.
Jesse coming off
underscore
of the
sports
Tyler
underscore.
And
Brian. Oh, that's right.
Video podcast. If you want to see Jesse's beautiful smile and handsome face, and if you want to figure out what Jesse has in his back seat in the car seat, I'm still trying to figure out if it was a toy.
It's the scariest car seat in the world. Every time I get into the car, its eyes look at me and it freaks me out. I feel like somebody's gonna jump me.
And if you want to just see Brian being a chiller, because Brian, this is the first time I've ever seen Brian with no 49ers gear on. So he's
and it's hurting. A 49ers show, by the way. So
he's hurting. Tune in. TMB. We love Tyler. We love Brian.
Fat boy,
we
fadeaway
love
sports.
Derek. We love everybody.
Yeah. I think that's it for us.
All right.
Folks, again, enjoy the rest of your week.
Peace, God.